May all beings always have happiness and its causes. May all beings always be free of pain and its causes. May all beings always be pain-free and live happily. May no beings ever cling to those near nor spurn those far. For as long as space abides, as long as the world remains, just so long may I be there, resolving all beings' pain. So we sing that to begin with because it's really the heart of our motivation. Within the Buddhist tradition, and truly in all great traditions, the center, the golden rule, is to wish happiness to everyone just as we would like it ourselves, do unto others. And so it's also absolutely central in Buddhist understanding of ethics. And so we begin with that. It's also very easy to understand that this is a good wish and a wish that is in accord, really, with the highest principles, the highest intentions that we could set for our own spiritual development. May everybody be happy. May they be free of suffering. Me too. And the second verse that we sing is a very famous verse from Shantideva, an 8th century Indian poet, yogi, meditator, who is famous for his teaching on how to develop this kind of open-hearted, really kind of unbelievably altruistic, compassionate, loving, all-encompassing intention. Everybody, for as long as space abides, that means till the end of the universe, which for Buddhists is endless, actually. So in other words, forever may I be a resource. May I somehow be there and be helpful. So I want to talk to you today about some central principles from the Buddhist path and also say a little something about how these principles relate to the practice that we're going to do at 11, which, as many of you know, is a very simple practice. And yet, when we look at it, we see that it contains a great deal of possibility for us. Several Sundays ago, I don't remember when, maybe in February or even November, I talked some about the life of the Buddha. And one very important statement there, in the way that it was told, at least in the 1800s in Tibet, is something I want us to bring to mind again. And that is the fundamental human predicament. Well, this is what we want to understand, right? When we are setting out on a spiritual path of any kind, on a program of a reflection and development of any kind, it's always premised on some understanding of what our situation is as human beings. So our situation as human beings is that, according to the Buddhism that develops in India and then goes to China and Tibet and Bhutan and Japan and Korea and Vietnam particularly, is that everyone who exists, every living being, is in essence naturally luminous. That's the starting point. Naturally luminous means that we are not stuck in any particular way. Whatever difficulties or faults we may have are not inevitably, inextricably rooted in our character and being. We're like light. Light can change, it can shift, but it always has a shine to it. It always has a glow. So every being is in essence naturally luminous. And yet, that's not always the whole story of our predicament. There are aspects within us, well, as he puts it here, the truth of this, the truth of your personal luminosity, and maybe in a certain way, the modern metaphor for this luminosity, this unfixed potential, that is to say, possibility, like in space, anything can arise. Light can go anywhere, everywhere, swiftly and quickly, and it never stops moving or shining. A lot of possibilities. Can change color. Maybe. A modern metaphor for this is brain plasticity. can pick your metaphors. The idea, which neuroscience has made very clear in the last bunch of years, that actually we used to think, science used to think, that our brains stop growing at a certain age. But it turns out they don't. There's always the possibility for something new to happen. So on this, science and Buddhism are very much in accord. So therefore, it becomes important to reflect that the other side of this predicament, yes, there's this luminous potential, it's obscured, though. It's obscured by, this author describes, as a dim unknowing. In other words, we don't know our potential, and we get messed up when we fail to understand how our thoughts and our actions really shape our lives. We know external conditions are very, very important. And it's also from the perspective of a practitioner to really honor how significant are our own intentions, our own possibilities. And this speaks again to this kind of plasticity, this kind of potential that everyone has. A great being, Tulsi Rinpoche, who Harvey and I also studied with a little bit, and is very close to us in other ways, was the head of the Nyingma, the most ancient of the Tibetan traditions, for a long time. He said this. I'm going to read it to you, and it's going to be a frame for what I'm going to say now also. Watch your thoughts. They become words. Watch your words. They become actions. Watch your actions. They become habits. Watch your habits. They become character. He's talking about a cause and effect process here. That is what, from the way that we look at things, the way that we create the kind of dimness, the kind of obscuration of the actual potential that we have. We think things that aren't that positive or helpful, and then we speak about them. Gossip, for example. And then that we act on the basis of things that we say, right? We influence each other with our speech a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot. And then that becomes habitual. So this is another way of saying that we are beings in process. We are persons in process. Now, process is a good thing because process means that something can change. Process also means that things can go south. It can change one way and then go another way. So what we're interested in, of course, is how to optimize the process. And this is where I will call on our friend Shantideva, the 8th century poet, whose verse we just sang together. His writing is considered very, very important for the development of character, you might say, for the development of fundamental orientation to be of benefit to others and to oneself. So implicit here is the power of intention, thought and intention. And this is good news because intention is pretty easy to develop, isn't it? Intention, it's very easy. It's every one of us, whatever our failings, has the capacity to develop a positive intention. I would like to be kinder. I would like to be kinder. I can see that it's a good thing. I can't help losing my temper a whole lot, but I would like to be kinder. You can have that intention. And you can have an intention like that without slamming what you're actually at. You know, our intentions are meant to guide us and bring us forward from where we are now. So I would like to be kinder. I would like to be more punctual. That's a tough one. But if I have this intention, then there's some possibility. If I don't even have that intention, forget about it. I would like to eat more healthily. That's also a big one. Complicated. And so on. The power of intention is really, really powerful and significant. So it's important to take time to create some intention. And that's, in fact, what we did and what we always do before a meditation session, an intention that I will develop. I will cultivate support for maintaining capacity for maintaining whatever intention I would like to develop. For example, I'd like to be kinder today, for the next hour. until 4 o'clock. So how does a good intention, we all have experience with good intentions, no? New Year's, good resolutions. What sustains a good intention? This is an important question for us. Three things Shantideva offers that sustain a good intention. Carefulness. Being careful. Self-reflection. Being aware of what you're doing. Oh, I made an intention to be kind today. How did I do? Well, I was a little kinder than I might otherwise have been. And I wasn't so kind after a while. So carefulness, introspection, or I like to say self-reflection, it's a kind of awareness. Should you continue what you're doing? Is it in your, to your benefit, to the benefit of others? And finally, patience. Patience, very, very important. Oh, I screwed up again. No. So I'm going to say just a few things. These are each very rich chapters in Shantideva's text, which we sometimes do talk about, teach here. We will be teaching it in the future. It's really a guide. It's considered a guide to optimizing our situation. The guide, the user's guide, the human's guide to optimizing the human situation. That's not what he calls it, but that's really what it is. So when it comes to carefulness. So carefulness, we've already really talked about, it means just to consider, I find myself in the middle of an action, reaching for a certain kind of food, getting up at a certain hour, going back to sleep, ready to open my mouth and bite somebody with my words. And if I'm careful, then I can consider, is this something, this is a good idea? Is this in alignment with my intention? Once we have an intention, a way to preserve it from deteriorating is to just maintain care about it. Am I still in alignment with that intention? And then sometimes we find that our wish to bite just overpowers our intention. You even remember, yeah, I said that earlier, but I really need to tell this person this or that, right? I've been there, okay? So we can see, but at least there's some awareness. Some awareness, that's already something. Then maybe next time I'll refresh my intention, realize I went against my intention, and by the way, how did things work out after I bit this person with my words? Did that really provide some kind of solution to whatever problem I was trying to solve by my abiding? Maybe not. And maybe I'll go back to my intention and refresh it. So that's carefulness. And again, I want to say that carefulness is different from dumping on yourself. Judgment. We talk a lot at Dawn Mountain about judgment. Self-criticism. That's not what we're talking about. Self-criticism, you may have heard Harvey say, as he frequently does, it's the common cold of sort of psychological disorders. Just always criticizing. This is not what we're talking about here. I just want to be very careful to make that distinction. Being careful and noticing is different from slamming yourself. Oh, I did this wrong. I did this differently from what I intended. Okay, I'll try again. Tomorrow's another day. The next minute is another minute. There's always time to start again. There's always, and that potential has not been vitiated at all. That's a good time to remind ourselves. You still have the potential to change that. And then guarding awareness. So that means that we're always in a situation where circumstances will upend our intentions. Delicious, fatty food is served in some circumstance, and you think, I decided, but it's here and it's so good and I'm hungry. So just, it's their fault. Somebody put this in front of me. What can I do? So here, of course, I'm summarizing many, many rich things that Shantideva and commentaries on him have written, but he has one very famous verse on this point, which also I think we can all relate to. You know, you can't change the world. Have you noticed that? You cannot make the world accord with the way you want it to be. It's not going to happen. And that's often what we try to do. We try to organize the world so it won't bother us. You know, tell our friends how to behave, for example. Or only go places where we're going to meet circumstances that are friendly to us. But that turns to be quite a fruitless endeavor. Or have enough money always so that nothing will ever happen. Or eat right so that... But we can't control circumstances. And recognizing that is actually very healthy. Relax. You can't control the world. Give it up. What you can control over time, develop some power over, is your own mind. Instead of your mind running away with you and controlling you, who's boss in your life? Your positive intentions? Or your, you know, mind runs away with you, gets some idea, takes you away, some feeling that you act on. So he says this, to be angry, he's talking here particularly about guarding against anger, because that's a big destroyer of an intention to kindness, destroys a lot of positivity. It destroys love. The first line we sang was about, may all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. That's the opposite of anger or hatred. When we're angry, we're not into the other person's happiness. We don't care. In fact, if we can harm them and really make them, you know, sit up more, maybe that's even better. But we're never going to be able to prevent people from doing things that make us angry. Have you noticed that? You just can't. It doesn't happen that way. So Shantideva says this, where will you find enough, you know, the world is a rocky place, another metaphor, but you can't cover the whole world with soft leather so that we're, right? You can't. It's too big a project. What you can do is you can put on a shoe. A little bit of leather, just a little bit on your foot, and the whole world is smooth for you. So he's saying, similarly, you can't make the world behave in the way that you want, but if you, in the same way, he says, since I can't control external events, I will gain power over my own mind. Wow. Instead of being always reactive to circumstances, well, I had to get angry. You know, somebody cut in front of me in line. What do you think I said to them? You know, we talk often as if this is just pulled out of us, and there's no other way to behave. But in fact, if we have an intention, remember that intention, that thought, which will give rise to speech, which will give rise to actions, which will give rise to habits, which will give rise to character, that little trajectory that we're always on, we want to point it in the right direction. And we can do that by having some power over our own mind. Then, he says, what concern do we have if other things are not controlled? We can't help people from misbehaving, but we can have the equivalent of shoe leather, but of course it's much softer, some kind of introspection, some kind of awareness about our own situation and our commitment really to maintaining some kind of intention. And we recognize that maintaining an intention is not easy. It's a challenge. We need to recognize that from the very beginning. That will help us have patience for ourselves. I often like to quote, it's only the Dalai Lama in his first visit to the United States. He came to the University of Virginia, where I was then a graduate student, and sat in Jeffrey Hopkins' basement with about, I don't know, 50 people. It's very intimate. He wasn't that famous in those days. And he said, if you are, you know, practicing and developing intention, let's say to kindness, and you find, he said, that over a 5-year period, instead of being angry and blowing up 10 times a day, You only do that 5 times a day. He said you should take great joy in your progress. That's an incredibly kind statement and a very realistic statement. We are human beings. We have enormous potential, and we also have a lot of habits right now that are dimming that potential, and they can be thinned out, but it takes time. It takes time. It takes commitment. And that's why we meet every week. We practice every day, ideally, so that we can begin to refine these habits and tendencies that we've already developed and begin to develop other habits and tendencies. And the way that our practice does this, so when we sit in a particular way. I'll do a guided meditation. Sit in a particular way so that we're quite aware of how we're sitting and our body already. That already means we are in a state of being careful and also being self-reflective. I want to sit in an upright manner. Am I or am I not? I want to have my chin tucked in a little bit. Is it or is it not? These are very simple and very important habits to develop, just to look and see, how am I? And then I seek to settle my mind. Is my mind settled or is it not settled? I can just notice, again, without slamming oneself with judgment. Oh, I'm a terrible meditator. This is the first time I'm meditating, maybe. Oh, what will happen? Just curiosity, just interest. Nobody walks by and stamps you, you know, like my Rice students with, you know, they always want to know what grade they're going to get. But life isn't really about getting a grade. Although there are important phases of life where grades are important, granted, right? But life is really about being alive and seeing what's going on and seeing what we can do to optimize our potential. Finally, that's really what enlightenment is, actually. This word enlightenment that is bandied about quite freely in circles that talk about Buddhism and so on, enlightenment. Tibetans very carefully parse this word, and it's very much in line with what we were just saying. It basically means dissolving those things that are obstructing our potential, dissolving our bad habits slowly over time, refining, dissolving. And then, like from a fertile garden, you know, dissolving, you know, pulling up roots, that's dissolving roots, right? Getting rid of what's not helpful, and evolving the positive qualities that are consonant with your most auspicious intention. Dissolving and evolving, that's the path. And the cultivation of carefulness, self-reflection, and patience are actually intrinsic to the practice that we will do in a few minutes. You will be cultivating all those things just through that very simple practice.
If you enjoyed this teaching, please visit our website, donmountain.org, to subscribe to this course and find other great Dharma offerings. May all beings always have happiness and its causes. May all beings always be free of pain and its causes.